Morning.
Okay, very, very good. I'm so delighted to be here and for the city councilor and for the president for Innovation Norway, for Oslo Met, and the various other partners, BI, that are hosting this event. Thank you both for me being here, but also, more importantly, for the engagement of all of you in the goals of accelerating Oslo and Akershus, vegan, I can pronounce that slightly better, through innovation and entrepreneurship for economic and social progress. So what I'm going to do is give a little bit of an overview of the type of work, the approach, our theory of change that we've instantiated within the MIT REAP program. And hopefully what that can do is then set the stage for discussion of the ongoing work about the choices that the REAP Oslo and Akershus team are working on, and then we'll be able to all kind of come together and think through our reactions to that, engage with that material, interact in an interactive way to really think the feedback and the contribution that we can make to that region going forward. Okay. So, why are we here? This is the Santa Clara Valley in Northern California in 1926. Carefully, you can see the new Apple headquarters. So that's literally what that region looked like. Actually, the Apple headquarters is about a mile this way. But essentially, you had an area that was essentially farmland. There was just apricot orchards that has been transformed into Silicon Valley, arguably the most area that concentrates more innovation and entrepreneurship in a particular region, in a dense area. Now, of course, many, many regional leaders from many, both the public sector, the private sector, from university, have asked, I'd like myself to be the next Silicon Valley. And this grim fellow over here, Josh Lerner, a colleague and professor at the Harvard Business School, went and looked at the large number of initiatives and programs to create the next Silicon Valley. It was about 10 years ago in a book called The Boulevard of Broken Dreams. And what he discovered was that the vast bulk of those efforts are, on the one hand, taken with good intention. They're not corrupt. And certainly in a place like Norway, probably not corrupt, right? Famously not. But very rarely do they succeed. And along with some colleagues I'm at MIT, most notably Professor Fiona Murray and Professor of the Practice Bill Allat, we came together to sort of work really hard on seeing if we could get at the root cause of how to think about that change that would be required. Why was there such a challenge in using, in sort of programmatically and thinking through how to harness the power of these ecosystems? How can we grow through accelerating innovation-driven entrepreneurial ecosystems? And that was what led to the founding of REAP. We've been able to draw upon a diverse range of faculty and staff. This is actually just, we keep on growing our ranks of faculty. And now we are actually up to more than 50 regions throughout the world because we've brought in a new cohort just this year. And that's actually really transformed our ability to look at a wide range of different efforts through a unified lens, through a unified theory of how change actually works. At the core of REAP is this notion that you have to get three big things right. And if you get those three things right, There's no limit to what energy you can bring to ecosystem development. The first of those is the role of stakeholders. We in this room. There's some areas of government. City councilor has some areas where he doesn't have to convene a huge meeting to say, this is what we're going to do. Or Innovation Norway could say, here's the R&D grant. But in ecosystem development, lots of different players matter, including, most importantly, those entrepreneurs and innovators. Of course, just having stakeholders to come together is not enough. We need to have an understanding of our system. How do the different parts fit together? Can we put some numbers to that? Can we put qualitative evidence around that? How do we kind of stitch together these different elements in a unified frame? And then finally, how do we take shared understanding through a stakeholder approach and turn that into concrete and specific actions to accelerate change? No one is in charge of entrepreneurship at the level of ecosystem. Ultimately, the core driver of any entrepreneurship ecosystem are the entrepreneurs and innovators that ultimately do the work of, as I'm not sure if Kurt is still here, right? But we love that example of the students taking their training in child services and translating into just a completely different domain. It would have been hard to have written that down in the government plan beforehand. But now we need to kind of enable those entrepreneurs to do the good things that they can do with that creativity and with that drive. And that's where all these other different stakeholders make a difference. University, government, corporate, risk capital. We've been privileged now to work with a wide number of regions throughout the world. We were in Tokyo a number of years ago for one of our called our cohort meetings. And many of you have been probably to Japan. It's quite hierarchical. And we convened a meeting. And we realized it was the first time that all the presidents of the five major Tokyo universities had been in the same room together. They just didn't do that. Didn't need to, didn't want to. And we were able to kind of move that ecosystem to something that involved a little bit more of a shared experience to start to think about how different actors in that ecosystem can work together. Just to be clear, this isn't, you know, I'm privileged to be at MIT, but if I came here and just told you what to do, that would be not a good use of your time and not a good use of my time. Ultimately, ecosystems are created by the people who are within them taking active action. And the question is, how can we do that? What drives those ecosystems? One of the kind of key insights that we draw on is this idea that when we're trying to think about innovation-driven entrepreneurship, the kind of AI and green technologies that the city council discussed, that we should be careful to think about the idea that most entrepreneurs are actually small businesses. And they are not likely, though once again, anyone can grow, but it's going to be hard for them to really come out of the particular small business activity that they do. But that there's a certain other kind of business that when newly formed young businesses that very often take more investment, take a little bit more nurturing, have a core idea, some unique idea, often leveraging something unique in their environment, some unique opportunity, that have the opportunity for significant and impactful growth that can actually affect the entire economy and really deliver social progress at scale, right? We can use the gamification to change thousands or tens of thousands of lives. The question is, where do these innovation-driven enterprises come from? I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but we sort of bring a framework to that. And one of the kind of key distinctions that we try to bring in that framework is that growth through entrepreneurship involves bringing together two pretty complicated things. It involves harnessing the innovative capacity of a region, the ability to develop new ideas, see new opportunities, tactical capacities, infrastructure, and the entrepreneurial capacity of that region, the ability to build a new organization, a new business to scale. Now, very often, when people look at examples like Silicon Valley or Israel or a few other hotspots, they'll say, oh, those are kind of very related to each other. Well, actually, right, there are places in the world, Korea, that are very good at innovation. I was going to say, we probably have some Samsung phones here, but I'm not sure what the phone mix there is in Norway, right? But right, Korea is an innovative economy. It's really built its economy on innovation, but not so much on entrepreneurship. And there are other places, New Zealand, highest rate of new business formation per capita, not a lot of growth through those firms. In fact, if you look across the data, there's not even a positive relationship between one metric of innovation, not the exclusive one, but something like patenting per capita and new business formation per capita. And one thing we try to do in REAP is think hard about how we can get into the granularity of these ecosystems and understand how the different parts fit together. What are the linkages between different elements of the ecosystem? This is Karen Mills. Karen was a venture capitalist in her background. That was her main thing that she did. She was sort of private equity and venture capital. And she found herself in the state of Maine. And for those of you who don't know where Maine is in the United States, it's kind of right on top on the right. It's the closest to Norway of anywhere in the United States. Okay? And Maine is not a particularly dynamic place. It does have strong clusters in certain areas. And for a variety of reasons, she found herself there. Her husband had been appointed president of a small college. And the governor asked her to kind of look at this ecosystem. This is almost 10 years, more than 10 years ago now. And what she found was that different pieces of the ecosystem each had tremendous strength, but they hardly knew who each other was. They didn't talk to each other. They might even see their, themselves socially and never talk about the work they do professionally. So the people at the university who were working on advanced composite materials weren't talking to the people in the boating industry who were the main cluster on the coast. But by bringing together these actors, having some transparency and honesty, they were able to enable a set of programs that allowed a revitalization of a set of different clusters across Maine through that stakeholder approach. I've already kind of mentioned this, but a key insight there is that a big part of these ecosystems is not trying to necessarily chase the next best thing that everyone else is chasing after, but is to fuse what you're already good at, what you're proud of, with those new opportunities. That's what clusters are. They're the ability to leverage your comparative advantage by taking advantage of the potential for innovation that's unique to your region. Right? You know, we've, once again, within the REAP program, we've now been able to look widely across a range, work and cooperate widely. One of the interesting things is, what that means is that if you're in Australia, right, you're going to be doing a lot very different things than if you're in Morocco, than if you're in southwest Norway, than if you're here in Oslo and Arkhus. I want to mention one other piece before we get into strategy. Is that as you kind of think about the work that the team has been doing, the work that you bring to this effort, think about how that system, what does it mean to change the system? What does it mean for Startup Lab to do the work that it does? And where would we see that? What do ecosystems look like? This is a doctoral student at MIT, who was a doctoral student, now a professor at Columbia Business School, Jorge Guzman, and really inspired by the REAP program, he pioneered a new way of thinking about how to create actionable metrics about this really hard process of identifying the innovation-driven entrepreneurs within a given ecosystem. He recognized, one, that to grow, you have to register your business, that there are big differences between the choices of the types of firms who grow and those who don't. So this, the Harvard bookstore or whatever it might be, right, is going to make some choices. When Jeff Bezos founded Amazon.com, he didn't call it Jeff's Books. He did a series of systematic choices that are observable relatively straightforwardly that indicated his potential and intention to at least try to grow, to embrace entrepreneurship growth. And then, of course, we can see some firms actually do grow. We all know who Amazon is because they're now a large, in fact, very large firm. That might be a separate worry, but so it goes, right? And so we can create a mapping between growth as a function of those early digital signals against the full population of business startups. This is probably the only thing you'll remember from this talk. Firms in the United States, firms that are named after their founders are 70% less likely to have a big growth outcome. Firms that apply for intellectual property very early and do something called registering in Delaware. That's actually a form of corporate governance in the United States. It's kind of a little bit more expensive, but makes you more open to investment and more complex transactions, are 20,000% more likely to grow. Once we had this, what we were able to then do was start visualizing ecosystems. So if you could just play the video just on the bottom left. So what you can see here is this is the area just around MIT. Each dot represents an address, and the number of the size of the dot is the number of firms, and the color of the dot is the entrepreneurial growth potential of those firms. And this is a very relatively compact space. There's MIT kind of over here. And what you're able to see kind of through this is that actually we see on the one hand in this region over here, this kind of whitish region, we can see all those bars and barbershops and, you know, accountants and so on and so forth who do their good thing. But over here, we can see the area called Kendall Square. We can literally, and if you kind of looked very carefully, you can actually see the dynamics of how it changed over time. Actually, Kendall Square started over in one group of buildings. Those firms started to grow. What'd that do? It raised the rent. And so then they had to find their way to the next building. I'm so excited to be, for me, this is the first time I'm in this particular building. This is a great location. I look to see this on that ecosystem map. Right? Marius and Torgerev from BI took this methodology a little bit for Norway to try to understand the startup process and the scale-up process in Norway, right? And really one of the kind of key insights is that as you think about your strategy, the historical record of growth over the past 20 or 30 years in Norway has been one where clusters and cities have been the locations of those firms that have ultimately been growers. And that's really important when we think about, as Innovation Norway thinks about its broader strategy, right? How do we address that across regions and across different clusters? Okay, finally, now about 5 minutes, is it? Okay, look at that, I'm right on time. Okay, what does that mean? One of the things we've tried to do is to really think hard about how to hopefully leverage, enable, and sort of engage the energy of all of you. What does it mean to enable, to bring together a stakeholder team? What does it mean to bring together an ecosystem? It's not like regular strategy, where, right, you ultimately get to decide and there's an implementation plan and dot, 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 you're off to the races. You need to rely on and engage with a wide number of actors where the actions of each amplify the choices of others. That's what ecosystem strategy implementation looks like. Part of that is choosing some specific set of activities that can drive impact that benefits in a real way each of the ecosystem players that are part of the stakeholder team, right? So in other words, if you do something that's just great for the university, that's great, but it's unlikely that other people are going to get on board. If we start, it's these initiatives that somehow cross multiple boundaries and really focus on root causes that very often make the difference. I'll come back to that. One way we think about that is that in order to both bring together stakeholders and sustain that, we need to bring together the ecosystem and then leverage that energy to choose and win some key must-win battles. What are some things that if you can do that together, you can do anything? If you can't do that, you probably can't do much else, right? We've been fortunate now to work with a bunch of regions, and I'm not going to tell you about all of them, right? But I am going to talk about Scotland because I think it's a useful frame. Scotland is not listed historically as, you know, the innovation and entrepreneurship hotspot. When they participated in REAP, and they were actually in our first cohort, so that we actually have, you know, almost 7 years of data on what happened. Donna Chisholm, who was at that time the head of business of innovation growth of Scottish Highlands and Islands Enterprise, right, which was the particular agency within Scotland that was involved in that activity. She looked at me, I remember, she said something very smart. She said, you know, we're already planning to spend money. We're already planning to spend time. And all the other different people are planning to each spend money and time. But we need to be spending money, time, and our activities in something that's going to make a difference. And that actually led to a reformulation of how they nurtured and grew entrepreneurship, growth-oriented entrepreneurship in Scotland. She has other programs for those small businesses, but really a focus on growth-oriented entrepreneurial education. I'm sure the kind of thing that we see in places like Startup Lab, in this building, so on and so forth. And a real focus on export, taking advantage, for example, of the diaspora of the global Scots community. In the interest of time, lots of other examples. I would love to get to them. But what do I want to kind of end with? And I'm just going to come back to Kurt Rice's comment about those students who took another direction. Is one of the transformational things about really focusing on an ecosystem approach is that you end up with entrepreneurs who can grow the economy, but are also most, in many cases, working on an important set of problems. And it's that combination of not just having an economic impact, but also addressing green, health and human services, the potential to reform our transportation systems that allow that entrepreneurship, that innovation-driven entrepreneurship, to be such an important driver of economic and social progress going forward. I look forward to engaging with all of you. Thank you so much. I think I have the spelling right now. So, Tak Skalduha, thank you so much. Okay, great.